Grow Great, the podcast, episode 4049. In 2002, I read a book that was published that same year entitled The New Wellness Revolution. Was authored by Paul Zane Pilser. Came out with a second edition in 2007. Today, it's about the mental wellness revolution in the entrepreneur empire, and we'll do it next. In 2004, my wife and I went to visit an elderly gentleman friend in the hospital. He had suffered ill health for a number of years, and once again he found himself in the hospital. His wife was doing what you've seen this before, dutiful wives who are helping their husband through a health crisis. Perhaps you've seen a husband do it with a wife. It seems more common, at least in my experience, to see a wife doing it. She was also battling the healthcare system of the Veterans Administration, and her health was beginning to show signs of wear and tear. And after our visit, we're walking down to the parking lot to our car, and as we get into the car, I have this epiphany. And I looked at my wife and I simply said, "I don't think I can do that to you." Now, it was a terrible indictment of our friend, but I didn't mean it like that, because the truth is his health issues mostly had nothing to do with any abuse or neglect. He wasn't responsible for much of his poor health. It was just genetics, you know. The gene pool had not been kind to him, and my comment was not meant to reflect poorly on his character, but more on my realization that if, and I know that's a big if, but that if I could better manage my health, then I felt like I owed that to my wife. And at the time, we had been married 26 years, and I suppose mortality was beginning to be more and more on my radar, as it does as we grow older. It had been years since I had taken my fitness very seriously, but the wellness revolution was in full swing. In fact, I mentioned earlier about reading this book in 2002. Well, that was 2 years before this event had happened. But you can go back further than that. Evidence of this wellness revolution was really everywhere, because back in 1977, it had hit American society in a major way with a book written by a gentleman named Jim Fix called The Complete Book of Running. 10 years before publishing that book, Mr. Fix had been this overweight, overstressed, smoked a lot, kind of a business guy. But he took up running, and he took his health more seriously. And he created, almost single-handedly, this exercise revolution. I mean, these were the days in 1977 before you would see a lot of people out jogging or cycling or really even walking. And sadly, Jim Fix died at 52. He had a heart attack. Proof, I suppose, that like my friend in the hospital, the gene pool is largely responsible for our health outcomes. His father had passed away of the same malady, I think even at an earlier age than 52. But American society would see this major shift, a revolution. Today, fitness changer, they're everywhere. Here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, we've got all the usual suspects like LA Fitness and Gold's Gym and 24-Hour Fitness and more. And even in the most foul weather, You can spot runners and you can spot walkers and cyclists. And of course, then the food revolution hit. Enter Whole Foods and other grocery stores that specialize in healthier food choices. And today, gluten-free and fat-free and sugar-free and I guess every other form of free has invaded the grocery aisle. And this is all positive, mostly. I mean, you can't really argue with a focus or a renewed focus on our physical health. Well, about a week after I told my wife that I didn't think I could do that to her, I joined 24-Hour Fitness, and I have mostly gone 5 times a week ever since. Okay, and it may not look like it. Deep down, I'm very fit. Underneath all this flab, I'm very fit. I am putting in the work. I'm putting in the work to make good on what I told her. The wellness revolution started happening in my life, and I really don't see it stopping anytime soon because this is one of those revolutions that doesn't have an end. I see the mental revolution that needs to happen. And I'm betting you do too. Sometime in the 80s, I started noticing friends struggle. And it was, well, it was shocking at first because, well, we were all still so young. Too young to be hospitalized with stress-induced physical problems. Too young to feel the pangs of chest pains that were strictly stress-induced. Certainly too young to have a legitimate real heart attack. Some even figured out that life is just not what it's cracked up to be. And they opted out. And before this, the only people that I knew who took their life were idiot teenagers, you know, who had dropped too much acid back in the 70s. And that, even that was rare where I lived, but it did happen once in a blue moon. And now here I was at the helm of a business still in my 20s. And I was seeing a toll, the pressures of building a business, of growing a business, of successfully operating a business. They were causing people to go crazy. I mean, it wasn't a medical or psychological diagnosis. It was just, you know, street lingo for pressure and intensity and anxiety and, you know, consistently exerted over prolonged periods of time. It was causing people that I knew to crack physically, mentally, emotionally. I know today it is sexy to be called an entrepreneur, but I'm going to burst your bubble. I'm not an entrepreneur. Back in the 80s, I didn't know any. I mean, I knew plenty of business people. I knew plenty of business owners, but it wasn't sexy. It wasn't glamorous back in the 80s. It was grueling. You know, a life sentence of devoting your life to days that blended into each other because no sooner did you get home until it was time to go back. I mean, some days we often wondered, why bother? And then we realized, well, because there's no showers at work. You gave up a lot. You just gave up a lot to be an operator. You still do. And I was an operator. I was a roll up your sleeves, get the job done kind of a guy. Nothing glorious about it. Nothing sexy about it. But these were the days before the internet. These were really the days before the business press. Well, okay, Fortune, Forbes, and Business Week, they existed. You know, but these things, they covered Wall Street kind of businesses. They didn't cover Main Street kind of business, which is what we were. I mean, man alive, In Search of Excellence was published in 1982, and thanks to authors Peters and Waterman business books after that book, they became mainstream and kind of sort of cool. But prior to that, I got news for you, because I frequented bookstores. You would have been hard-pressed to find a section in the bookstore called business. And if there was one, it was really dominated by books on selling, thanks largely to the insurance industry, which is what spawned all the best sales advice at the time. I mean, you were just as likely to find something worthwhile in the self-help section. And that's exactly what we seemed to need at the time, help. Unfortunately, helping ourselves wasn't so easy. And in spite of what the gurus of the 80s were preaching, we were business guys. I mean, sorry, we were mostly guys back then. Thankfully, that has changed, and now women can also enjoy the pain of business. Nobody was interested in feel-good philosophy. Man alive, we were busy. We were young. We were resilient. We could take it. We could take anything. We were foolish. We were ignorant. We were unlearned. We didn't know any better. Not realizing that our mental health was being fractured by the stress that drove us. And I know, because I was and I still am to a large degree a stress junkie, thriving on the chaos of operating a business, thriving on the chaos of building a business. It's an adrenaline rush and it fuels us. Now, it was worse back then, probably because I was younger and probably because I was more foolish than I am now. I mean, how can you know when it's too much stress? Well, I couldn't. Non-business type friends, they couldn't understand the drive. They couldn't understand the desire. They couldn't understand the pursuit of even more pressure, greater challenges, higher accomplishments. And I was operating in the small business world, running a small chain of retail stores doing about $14 million. Heady stuff for a 25-year-old, but no matter. Here I was in my 20s, and I might as well have been at the helm of General Motors. I mean, it was all the same to me. Working 80 to 100 hours a week, too many days living on Twix bars and Dr. Peppers. You know, thankfully, my religious convictions prevented me from drinking alcohol, from smoking, from doing drugs, or having an affair. All of the common behaviors, by the way, of way too many people that I knew at the time, and probably still true today. People convincing themselves that they deserved whatever vices they took up because of the hard work, because of the insane schedule, because of their success, or maybe even because of their failure. I never bought into that. And again, I'm going to attribute that mostly to my faith that kept me grounded along with a wife and two little kids. But man, not a single hour would pass that I wasn't driven by the three people at home who meant the most to me. But that also took a toll. I was way too often in the doghouse at home. Missed supper dates, last minute cancellations, late nights at work, you know, the typical crap that just goes with being a good operator, which is what I still suppose I am. I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't even like the word, but I know it's in vogue now. And so, okay, who am I to resist? We were business people, period. Just business people, doing the best we could, sometimes failing, sometimes not, but always like a dog chasing a car, just never satisfied because the game just keeps on moving. It just keeps on moving. And you move with it or you get left behind. Until something might stop you, like a health scare, like a fainting spell, like a heart attack or a stroke or exhaustion or a mental collapse of some sort. And then when that happened, yeah, got real, real then, very fast. And I've seen it up close and personal far too often. Well, about 6 years ago, I began to see a real need, the need for business people, owners, CEOs, presidents, leaders, executives, to take their lives more seriously. I suppose if there's one thing in the last 6 years that I have said more frequently to leaders as I've sat across from them trying to serve them, this has got to be at the top of the charts. You are a finite resource. You've got limits, and you'd better get busy knowing what they are so you can take better care of yourself. You can't just spend all of your life and all of your days expending yourself and thinking that you're never going to run out of fuel, because you will. Mostly, I think people, clients, they hear me, but I'm sad to report, probably don't change. Oh, some do, but I would venture to guess most don't. Because people who are unwilling to help themselves, you know, you're hamstrung as to help. I mean, I've come to put greater stock in that book category, self-help, because of it. I mean, it's not that you have to go it alone, but if you're not willing to help yourself, nobody's going to be able to help you. The mental revolution has never been needed more than right now. The internet has made entrepreneurship sexy and desirable. And forget that most people are going to fail. And forget that, frankly, the population of wannabe entrepreneurs is way, way higher than real entrepreneurs. And many are going to fail. They're going to fail big and lose everything they have. And some are going to fail big and lose everything they have, and they're still going to owe large sums of money. Forget that Snapchat lost over $500 million last year. Come on, let's just focus on that mythical valuation of $22 billion. And besides, the $500 million, it's other people's money that they're losing. Real money costing other people. You know, I could just absolutely throw up every time I hear some kid talk about losing money and failing at a business as though it is some rite of passage, and as though if they don't go through that, then they'll never achieve anything. I mean, something that every modern entrepreneur must do to earn their stripes. You know, we got to burn through somebody else's money or our own. We've got to fail. And if you're not failing, then you're not moving toward success. You've heard that. The stripes that they ought to earn, I think, are the whipping that they ought to take from every investor who loses a single dollar by betting on them. And yet many people feel like it's the education they deserve. I mean, those Snapchat kids, I mean, they ought to be earning double PhDs by now. They ought to be so stinking bright. Real business is hard. It's just hard. It's exhilarating for the right people, but it's hard. And the focus and the intensity that is required by the market, and I don't care if it was yesterday's market, I don't care if it's today's market, I don't care if it's tomorrow's market, it's always going to be demanding. And the market makes winners and losers of us all. The market can make fools of us all. It's not a life for the timid. And for the stress junkies, it's home. But grow too comfortable with it, and it'll eat your heart, and it'll take your mind. I'm here to tell you it doesn't have to be that way. In fact, it shouldn't be that way. The people who make the economy roll deserve better. Business people deserve better. Business leaders deserve better. So for 6 years, I have held these thoughts more closely than I probably should have. Mostly because they're just not yet popular. But I've talked about them in private circles with a few people, and I am fully convinced these thoughts will one day be popular, eventually. And I don't know what it's going to take. Maybe it's going to take a lot more people committing suicide. Maybe it's going to take a lot more people dropping dead of a heart attack. Maybe it's going to demand a lot more divorces, ending marriages. Maybe it's going to mean thousands of more kids of business people are going to have to endure repeated stints in rehab. I mean, something bad will happen to you if you don't take care of your mind. And then you'll listen. Then you'll pay attention. And it may be too late. It may be too late to fix whatever bad thing caused you to finally get a grip and come to understand that you could use some help. That thing that you can't see right now, that thing will suddenly become really clear. You know, it'll be like one of those pictures that we've all seen that just looks like a bunch of crazy patterns, but somewhere in there, there's a hidden word, there's a hidden image. You got to step back at it, and you got to stare at it, and you got to kind of squint your eyes to see it. And someday you'll see it. Like we see that image, and once we see that image, we can't take our eye off of it. Well, I'm hoping that you'll see it sooner. Your life, your family, your company, your employees, your customers, your partners, whether they're vendors and suppliers or some other kind of partner, they all hinge on you because you're the business owner. Specifically, you're the small business owner. And I say that because that's where my heart is. That's where I've spent my life. Companies that likely do under $50 million a year don't have some big org chart. In the trenches, fighting every single day. Oh, I've seen some that are doing a few $100 million a year who fit the bill, still small business. But I've seen some that aren't even doing $1 million a year, and some that are doing 3 or 5 or 10. The number's not important as much as kind of the scope and scale. Not operating on other people's money. Not listed on Wall Street. Not hobnobbing with the Boston Consulting Group or the kids from McKinsey & Company. Just guys and gals putting in the work. Making payroll again this week. Making another sale. And then another sale. And buying a new forklift or buying a new truck or leasing a new warehouse space or hiring a new web design outfit. Pumping millions of dollars every year into an economy while other people whine and moan about who's in the White House. We're operators. Our lives don't hang in the balance because of some politician. Sure, we care, but only because they get in the way of our making money and growing our business. Because we're capitalists. We're capitalists. We want to make something happen. We want to make money. We want to make something happen that we believe in, something that we think is worthwhile. And sure, we're driven by money. And all of that imposes more pressure on us. And happily so. And we often say, pile it on. You know, we got broad shoulders. It's got nothing to do with strength. It's got nothing to do with resolve. It's got nothing to do with resilience. The fact is we are mortal, vulnerable to prolonged or extraordinary pressures. Even the kind that stress junkies like me relish. Business people are like the professional athletes of a bygone era who suffered concussions. Thankfully, today's modern athlete, it's changing. We refuse to acknowledge our injury because we're fearful somebody else might replace us or fearful that others will think we're weak or maybe we're even cowards. And so we hide. We hide our loneliness. We hide our fear. We hide our anxiety. And when people ask us how things are going, we've got a patent answer. Fine. Things are fine. Many of us grew up to the mantra, never let them see you sweat. And we have lived that way, always. Hard to change. Really hard to change. Not impossible, but hard. Why you need to pay closer attention to your mental fitness. Every business owner, every business leader is really paid for one fundamental thing. You are paid to solve problems. And in solving the problems, I focus my work on three specific areas: making better decisions, executing improved actions, and doing both of those things faster, preferably in real time. I mean, come on. You can look back with some historical perspective and now figure out, you know, I should have done this instead of that. Well, anybody can do that. The challenge is, can you get it right more often than not in real time? Well, it begins with improving our ability to make the wisest choice in real time. And guess what helps that? Yeah, mental fitness. But fatigue and fear and loneliness and anxiety are just among the few things that can hamper improved decision making. I mean, do you really think that you're going to make your best decision? Do you really think you're going to do your best at problem solving when you've got these emotions playing a real prevalent role in your life, when you're stressed to the max, you really think you're operating at optimum capacity? No, you know better. Then why do you do it? I'm going to tell you why you do it. Because you're paid to solve problems. And you don't want other people knowing that you've got a problem. You don't want people knowing that you're afraid. You don't want people thinking that you're vulnerable. You don't want people knowing that you're amped up with anxiety and stressed over what should you do. You certainly don't want to let the employees know it. You don't want anybody else to see you as weak. It's head trash. That's what it is. It's head trash. It's your head trash that's standing in the way of your improved mental fitness. When we're facing some business problem, we will commonly ask ourselves, every business person does it, okay, what's the worst thing that can happen here? I'm encouraging you to ask yourself that same question, but go a step further, and that is have the courage to answer it. When it comes to your own mental and emotional fitness, I want you to ask yourself the question, what's the worst thing that can happen? And then I want you to answer it. Okay, ignore the problem. Ignore the stresses. Ignore all the other issues that might be confronting you, the problems at home, the problems at the office. And the worst thing that can happen is you crash and burn. You won't be operating at your best. Face the problems. Admit the problems. Be open to letting other people help you, and you will find yourself relieved, supported, feeling more confident. So I've got a question. Which version of you, of those two, which one would you want to hire? Then why are you resisting help? You know that you would want to hire the relieved, supported, confident version of you. You wouldn't want to hire the angst-filled, fearful version of you. You'll dispatch all kinds of resources to solve much, much smaller problems. I've seen you do it, and we all do it. But you will ignore yourself as the owner. You will ignore yourself as the chief leader. You won't make that investment because you're scared. Isolation. That's the big culprit. Oh, it's not isolation with our thoughts, man. We're overthinking it 8 ways to Sunday. But it's that isolation that fuels our fears, amps up our anxiety, builds up our stress. Peer advantage and peer disadvantage are things that our parents understood when we were little kids. And by the time we got to school, they really understood it. I mean, that's why your parents urged you to have good friends. Hang out with the kids that are well-behaved. Hang out with the kids that make good grades, or hang out with the kids that are committed to sports or band or whatever your parents valued. Those kids at school who consistently got in trouble, well, guess what they did? Yeah, they all hung together. And it all just seemed, and it was so cliquish, especially in high school, right? But we were learning. Even as kids, we were learning that we tended to behave and we tended to perform like the people around us. The troublemakers, they didn't make good grades. And they got in trouble more often than all the rest of us. And those honor society kids, well, they did well and they were highly regarded by the faculty. And the best athletes, they all seemed to be friends and they all seemed to stick together on and off the field. We mostly met the standard established by our group. You know you did, and so did I. Now, we're grown up. School's out, into the business world, and suddenly we think we're going to go it alone? Or that who we surround ourselves with now doesn't matter so much? We're wrong. Of course it matters. And no, we can't go it alone. Not if we want to be a high performer. Enter the problem. Even if you want to surround yourself with people who can help, here's the problem. And you know the problem as well as I do. How? I mean, not that there's anything typical about business people getting together? Because, man, there are tons of people getting together. There's breakfast meetings. There's association meetings. There's meetups now. There's networking events. There's social events. There's chamber events. I mean, we have more opportunities now to get out and about than we've ever had before. But these are very different. These are very different than be surrounded by people who only want one thing, and that is to help each other improve their mental and emotional fitness by becoming better decision makers, by becoming people who take better action, by becoming people who become faster at it. It's very common to encounter a CEO or a business owner who has some informal board. I come across this very regularly. And sometimes board members they've got invested money in the enterprise, and sometimes not. Oftentimes these board members, well, they've got their own businesses. But they almost always have some vested interest in the company. I mean, that's why they're on the board. They're on the board because they've got a relationship with the guy or gal that owns the company. And business owners, they can have an employee-based inner circle. Maybe it's a VP. Maybe you've got a CFO. You've got a right-hand man. Maybe it's a handful of people who are in key positions. Good people. In fact, maybe great people. Maybe rock stars in their own right. But again, they have a relationship with you. They have a relationship with the owner. They have a relationship with the CEO. She's the boss. Their careers, they're hanging in her hands. And then there's these associations, especially industry associations. And they, you know, we surround ourselves with people. They're just like us. They're in the same industry. They're reading the same trade magazines that we read. They're whining about the same industry woes and challenges that we're lamenting. And generally probably have very much the same outlook that we have. And now you're beginning to see the problem of eliminating the isolation. It's very easy to be in a crowd and still be isolated. But you can easily remedy the social isolation. The problem with that is it's not going to help you improve your mental and emotional fitness to grow your business. It's just going to give you people to interact with. There's a big difference in feeling better and getting better. There's a big difference in feeling better and growing. Growth is not always pleasant. In fact, more often than not, it's not terribly fun, but it's enormously rewarding. Okay, to each his own. I'll tell you right now, I'm not pompous enough to tell you that there's a single solution for everybody. I do think that there are solutions that any of us can apply, and some might be more universal than others. But let me talk to you about purpose. That really is the foundational issue when we're looking to solve our isolation problem and to grow as owners. Growing our business is so important to us, and it should be. But just ask yourself, why this group or why this event? Why is this event happening? I can't open up hardly an email without somebody touting some event, some seminar, some webinar. I mean, there's always some group meeting, some event happening. You know this. This is the world we live in. Look past the surface answer. Sometimes it appears to be instructional, but really, it's just about selling the people that are in attendance. You know that. When's the last time you were on a webinar that wasn't a sales pitch? Sometimes it pretends to be educational, but instead, it's just promotional. Sometimes it's one of those broaden your network kind of things, but really, it's people hawking their products or their services. We are in a world of platform performers that get up on stage and speak for 45 minutes so that they can spend 2 hours selling books or courses at the back of the room once that presentation's over. I mean, there's nothing wrong with any of this. I'm not bitter about it, and I'm not overly romantic about it. It's just the way the world works. Smoke and mirrors. Bait, then switch. How can you find a remedy? How can you find a remedy with a pure purpose? By making sure you surround yourself with people whose primary focus is just in helping you grow your business and in helping you grow as a leader. I'm forming a very small group, just 7 business owners from around North America, expressly for that purpose, to help each member grow their business and to help each member grow as a leader. It's about helping each other. It's about helping each other make better decisions. It's about helping each other take more meaningful action. It's called the Bootle Network Owners Alliance. You can read more about it. Just go to the website, find episode 4049, snoop around, or not. But we've got to recognize our problem. I mean, there's a reason that support groups are so popular. Because they work. They're effective. And if you're scared, I understand it. Get over it. Just get over it. Put yourself in the best position possible to experience greater success. Surround yourself with people that are willing to help you. And then allow yourself to be helped. And honestly, that may be the toughest ask of them all, especially for some of you. Find the strength. Find the courage. I'm going to challenge you. Find the humility that's necessary to accept help. But you know what? It's also one of the best paths toward helping other people too, because it's not all about you. It's about your ability to bring some help to somebody else, somebody more or less like you. The mental wellness revolution, it's coming. It's coming. It's already started. It just needs more fuel. It needs more people willing to join. It's a two-way street. It's a two-way street of helping and being helped. And you need to be part of it, because there's nothing that you can do for yourself and there's nothing that you can do for your business that will be more valuable than you being at your best mentally and emotionally. How can there be, when you're paid to solve problems, when you're paid to make good decisions? It's the name of the game. Okay, I'm going to get down out of the pulpit now. That's the sermon for today, kids. I'm glad that you were here. I really am. I'm thankful that you spent the better part of 40 minutes with me. Greatly appreciated. Subscribe to the podcast. You can find ways to do that by going to the website at growgreat.com. There's also a button there. If you have any interest in the Bootle Network Owners Alliance, just click that tab in the navigation. Take you right there. It's a startup. It's a startup project. You might be interested. You might not. If you're interested, great. If you're not, that's okay. But I'm going to encourage you, get on board the mental wellness revolution for your sake, for your business's sake, for your employees and your customers' sake. It's important. It really, really is important. My name is Randy Cantrell. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio.